How many of you mothers are like one of them? I forgot her name. Actually, it was in the Reader's Digest where someone was talking to her and said she had three kids, kind of rambunctious little boys, and they asked her, said, you know, if you had it to do all over again, would you still have kids? She said, yeah, but not the same ones. Hopefully you don't feel that way, but it's according to what age you are with your children, you might feel that way, right? Probably if they're still in their teens, you might feel that way. It is true, right? That sometimes you just want to be scriptural and lay hands on them. Right there. You just want to strangle them. I mean, really, just for a second. That's true. Hello? Isn't that right? Yeah, that's true. All right. We're not going to talk just to moms today. We're going to talk to parents. I read where two little boys a long time ago were arguing on a street corner. They were both pretty new to the little town that they were living in, and they were both arguing about which one had moved the most. And one little boy said, well, you know, we've moved three times in the last 3 years. And the other little boy said, well, hey, that's nothing. My family moved five times in the last year, and I found them every time. The family can be saved. If you've paid any attention to what's happened to the family, and I'm going to the biblical definition of that, you know, that's been reworked by our judges and all here lately. What constitutes the family is not what it used to constitute the family. And when I say the family, I'm talking about a husband, a wife, and children like that. It's been under attack terribly since the 50s, and in the last 7 or 8 years, it's sped up quite a bit, where and a lot of the stuff you see today is nothing but attacking the family, from transgender bathrooms to people changing their gender. All that is nothing but the devil's way to attack the family. Because when you go back to the Bible, the family was the means by which God would bring the redemption of Jesus through the whole system. And that's exactly what it is. So everything that is an attack. And if you've paid any attention at all, if you remember back in, what did they say, in 61 is when prayer came out of schools. Isn't that what Miss Jan told us? Do y'all remember that? Is that what year it was? And from since then, really, as Dennis Prager talked about, he thinks that was the starting point of the civil revolution that's going on in America right now with ideologies, which, you know, how we're going to govern these things and do these things. And it goes from there to all these family system things, and they all are around the family. And it's been going that way, and it's been going downhill. In 71, David Cooper, a British psychiatrist, wrote a book entitled The Death of Family. The death of the family, and in that, this is basically what he said. He says, we need to eradicate the family. We don't need a family system. We don't need men and women, and, you know, we need to do away with it. And then the feminist lady in Millett, in her feminist manifesto, said the same thing. Women would never be free as long as there was a family unit. We need to get away from it. And here's exactly what happens. If you go back and you look at that teaching that was coming on in 71, how many years ago was that? You math students. Quickly, I didn't do it. I'm asking you. Help me. 71 to 2017 is how many? Y'all got to be better than math than me. Hello. How many years is that? Can I have a consensus? 46? Going once? Going twice? Three times, 46 years ago. It promoted itself through the universities, so now you're not surprised that the people in out of that graduated through all that were indoctrinated with all that, are the ones in the government making decisions now. So you don't have to be surprised if that's the way that works, and that's the way it still is working. So when you have that, and even in the illustrious former Miss President, not President, what you call a president's wife? First Lady. I'm not sure I would call her that. Anyway, in 1996, she published a little book. Y'all remember what it was? Hillary? It takes a what? A village. You know what she was promoting in that? You and I, as parents, go back and, well, don't buy it. If you can find it in a junk pile somewhere, you can scan through it. Don't buy it. For sure, don't buy it. She was saying, we don't have enough sense to raise our kids. The government needs to tell us how to raise them. So she went some started promoting full-day daycares from three-year-olds up. Why? So that they could be taught, because you and I cannot raise them. I mean, that's what it is. So you have all of that, and that's exactly why when I say the family can still be saved, boy, we've been going down the tubes. But there is hope for it. But it's going to take us parents, moms and dads and grandparents, to help us. You know, some people say that, you know, whenever the children start leaving the home and you have empty nests, the way some people is that, you know, some people, they go through all these midlife crises and they don't know what to do. And then the other ones change the locks where they can't move back in. That's what, there's two ways to handle that. How do you do that? The family can be saved. As I've just said, it has been going downhill, and I know you know this. You've heard me say it plenty of times, but, you know, I wasn't raised in a Christian environment whatsoever. But even there were some basic guidelines that even all the pagans around me, and there was a lot of them, they just operated from a family system and just a work ethic, and even how they respected Sunday. And they were not even close to being a believer. And how all of that now has changed. Like someone had said anonymously, you know, our great-great-grandparents would call Sunday the Holy Sabbath. Our grandparents might say it was the Lord's Day. Our parents might say it's Sunday, and now everybody else says it's just a weekend. That's where we've gone, downhill. But it can be saved. And quickly, we're going to look at some guidelines. To keep the family healthy and holy, we need to apply consistently just a few simple guidelines, principles set forth from God's Word. For parents, it's our responsibility, and it is absolutely difficult. Socrates said that if he could climb the tallest hill in Athens, you know Socrates, the great orator, he says, if I could climb the highest hill in Athens, I would shout it out to everyone. He says, why is it you scratch under every rock and you try to accumulate all this wealth and you spend all that time doing that, but you do not train your children who you will relinquish all your finances to? And he says, it's going to be thrown away. You know, why would you do all that? That's exactly what Solomon said, right? Why you stay up all day making money and stay up all night trying to keep it when your fool children are going to throw it away? I paraphrase it a little bit, all right? But that's exactly what it says. And they'll throw it away. And that's exactly, he said, be careful. We should constantly teach our kids the truth of God's Word. Four things, if remembered, will help ensure, it will help. It's not a guarantee, but it could help us make sure that our children have a chance at turning out the way God intends for it. And number one is this, that understanding that children are a blessing from God. That's it. It doesn't take much if you just listen. The way people handle things now, they don't exactly see that. Hopefully you don't read a lot of the news, but you don't have to read much to where you find out such and such in such a place threw her baby just born out the third story window in a trash can. It died from skull fractures. I mean, it just been born and just throws it out the window and gets rid of it. I mean, that kind of stuff where they're not seen as special anymore, and mainly because they're not seen in God's image. This is true even with the world, even after the fall, even when we're living a fallen world, children are still seen as special. They're living proof that God's mercy extends to a fallen, sinful creature. Whenever they sin, instead of God just eradicating them and just taking them off the face of the earth, he said, no, I'm not going to start over there. I'm going to work through that just to show that people can be redeemed. So it was a blessing, and that's exactly what God created them for. It says what? Lo, children are a heritage of the Lord, and the fruit of the womb is his reward. It is amazing. And part of our responsibility as parents is to help them understand that. But see, what happens if we buy into the system, and let me just back up and say, we want to do everything we can to help our parents with children. Why? Because the government's not going to help you. And unfortunately, the school system's not going to help you, and the university's not going to help you. And now, unfortunately, too many churches are not going to help you. Why? Because they bought into this system where we got to tolerate everybody, and everybody's got to be accepted. No, we don't. Well, I do. I agree. Some of these nuts, we need to accept them on a leaky boat and pull it offshore and sink it. That's exactly where they need to be. You say, well, that's harsh. That's exactly... Okay, let me get out of here. I'm fixing to get in trouble. That's exactly what God did when he knows. That's what Romans is about. You know what it says? It says, God turned them over to a depraved mind. You know what that means? They had gotten to that point where he says, it is pretty much impossible for them to ever turn around. When you start doing the things with God's creation and said, oh, no, I get to choose who I want to be, you're just about there. And so God says, when you enter into this land, I know them. Here's what you do with them. You kill them all. Why? Because I know how they would influence you. Did they listen to God? No, they didn't. And what happened to them? They went into captivity. Why? Because of influence. All right, that's not our sermon. Happy is a man that has a quiver full of them. They shall not be ashamed, but they shall speak with the enemies at the gate. It is absolutely clearly in God's plan that children are meant to be a blessing. And they are a blessing when they arrive for about the first year. Right? Oh, he's so cute. She's so cute. And they have all this stuff. And then after all that stuff, especially when they start talking, starts going downhill some. I mean, that's the truth, right? Our evaluation of them, once they start to walk and being able to do things, that's right. But here's the other part. But left exposed to the world and unshaded by a proper kind of love and teaching and protection, they'll break our hearts and God's heart. Absolutely. It's absolutely necessary. And please understand, as we go through this, we'll see, you can still have people. Well, I'm going to let you read it, all right? Parenting is meant to be a joy. If God sent the children to be a blessing, guess what happens? You get a second blessing while you're parenting them. It's supposed to be continued on. If it's the privilege to be enjoyed, his design in giving us to children is to bless us, then what? He makes an extension and a magnification of that blessing by being able to be involved in that process. It is a task. Absolutely, it's a task because some children, they say, Madison didn't make it that far, so we're still at, the jury's still out on Meredith. Just going to wait and see. All these people say, well, she's, I said, whoa, wait a minute, we ain't even halfway there yet. You know, just because it starts out good don't mean it ends that way, right? What'd they say? It ain't over till what? No, I'm not going to say that. No, Yogi Berra said it ain't over till it's over. All right? don't start making a judgment yet. But it's supposed to be, but they're difficult. One little town in Idaho, I can't pronounce the name of it. It's three different words. This the police called, some of the people in this little area were kind of like a subdivision, I guess you would say, in this small town. They called the police because there was a car in reverse going round and round a block. It was just back and forth, And this teenage girl was in it, driving it. So they just called the police, and the police came and stopped her and said, what is going on? Said, well, Mom and Dad let me drive the car, and they're gone, and I put too many miles on it, so I'm trying to back up and race them. They don't do things very smart. That's just it. You've got to teach them that. You do understand that, right? Part of this character, part of discernment comes with you've got to train them, and they become what you train them. That's exactly what we'll see. It says, correct your son, and he will give you rest. Yes, he will give delight to your soul. That's exactly what God says. I made him a blessing, but guess what? It'll be a second blessing if you do this thing right. And that's exactly what our role is. It is not so difficult if we follow some simple principles that God has given us. If they're neglected, then parents, what we're supposed to be inheriting as a blessing turns out to be a burden that God never intended us to have, simply because we didn't follow some basic principle guidelines. Like they said, they'd put a chicken in the circus where the elephant was in his holding pen, and immediately the chicken looked around, and he said, we need to establish some rules. Let's don't step on each other, right? That's the chicken's idea. You got to have some guidelines to get anything done. And that's exactly what God did. He left them for us. One way parents can fill their lives with misery, especially in the future, is to push off that responsibility and let and give it to somebody else that God gives us. So therefore, nothing in life will bring us more gladness if we follow the guidelines of whatever. You know, you buy some kind of machine or car or something, if you understand how the thing's made, a lot of times you get a lot more joy out of it, right? Isn't that right? When you know exactly how it operates. That's why guys are always in trouble. We never read directions and how that thing's supposed to work to start with. Okay, this is the part I meant to erase because it's duplicated in there for some reason. But even the discipline process ultimately produces joy when we're faithful to God's instructions. Why? Because even in the disciplinary process, they learn something. And guess what? It brings a joy when you see your child making the right decision because they've learned how to think and say, you know, man, I don't want to do that. Y'all remember that in high school, right? Some of you were born at about the same time, but you graduated in 75, so we're long enough. We used to get whippings in school, and nobody asked the parents if you could do it. And who lived in that era? Okay? I don't ever remember getting a whipping by the principal. Why? Because I had more sense than that. That's all. When I saw them getting one, I said, all it takes is not to do that, and I don't have to go in there. Because they didn't call home and ask anybody. They just said, you do that. And then sometimes, even if they didn't admit that they did it, he would still spank them or whip them. Not spank them, had a board about that long, had holes in it, make you bend over and touch the desk in his office. Y'all remember those days? You could hear them outside the room. That's how I know. I wasn't in on that, thank the Lord. Why? Just because I learned enough that I don't want to go there, right? Number three, success in parenting depends on the parents' actions. You say, wait a minute, what does that mean? It's not just what they do, it's what we do. That's the responsibility part of it. We cannot measure our success as parents only by what our children become. You know, maybe you say, well, they made it this, so that means I'm success. No, you can't just use that criteria only. It's not good. It'd be skewed. Sometimes children raised in fine Christian families, they turn out to be pagans. And sometimes people raised in pagan homes turn out to be okay. You know, I'm an example from that. Wasn't raised in a Christian home. You know, everything that was around us in our community, they were good people, but it was not God-related whatsoever. So when I look back and I say, well, how is it I'm not alcoholic, number one? How is it that I even, well, in the place that I'm in, it's just in God's sovereignty. You can see good ones come out of bad situations and bad ones come out of good ones. There's no absolute guarantee any way is the scripture that we're about to look at. Other times, God graciously just redeems children, as I would be one of those. It says what? Train up a child in the way he should go. This is one of those verses a lot of people quote and say, well, I know if I just do this, that God's going to have to bring him back. That doesn't mean that. That's not what that means. When it says, the actual imperfect verb that's used here in the Hebrew, it says, as he's growing old, not just when he gets old. He says, train him up as he's going. You start when he learns how to talk, and you keep working with him, and you keep teaching them as they're growing up and taking every opportunity you can. As they're growing up, if you instill in them these things, when they get out there and they turn away, they do have something that they can turn back on, that they remember this. They have something, but if they don't have it, and guess where they're not going to get it? You know, we used to have, we stopped before we would, this was right on up to the eighth grade, where before we went to lunch every day, we all stood up beside our desk and someone said a blessing. We said a pledge of allegiance to the flag. It wasn't illegal to have a flag in there. Did y'all see any of that nonsense last week in one of those, ain't none of y'all from California, are you? That's a nut place over there, I'm telling you. Where they took the American flag out of the classroom because they interviewed the student body president. And what's his name? He does all kind of videos and goes on the scene. And he said, oh, no, it's oppressive. We liken the American flag to the Nazi flag and the ISIS flag. It's oppressive. And so he started asking this guy because the guy was a Hispanic guy. He said, "Now, where are you from?" He said, "Well, I'm from Mexico." He said, and he got to push him. He said, "Yeah, you know, I'm over here." And he said, "How are you going to school?" "Well, I'm on grants." He said, "Isn't that a little bit hypocritical?" He said, "Well, you got to take advantage of the system to change it, where we understood what the flag represented. We learned some things like that in school. Unless it's, even if it's a devout Christian school somewhere, you're not going to get it in the public sector anymore. Am I right or wrong? Hello? It's not going to come from there. It ain't going to come from the government. And unfortunately, it won't come from a lot of churches. Why? Because too many of the churches have bowed down to the pressure and said, "Oh, we got to be tolerant. We just got to love everybody and not tell them the truth." And that's exactly where you are. It's constantly folding where they say. So where's it going to come from? It's going to come from us, Mom and Dad. If they're going to get it, and it was always that way, it didn't just start that way. While each child grows up and makes their own choices, how a person is brought up, it influences to a great extent what they'll become. They will become what they're trained to become. Michael Jordan said about his mother and father before his father was killed in 93. He was interviewed by, I forgot the sportscaster guy's name, and he was talking to him. He said, "You know, my greatest heroes are my mom and my dad." You know, you're talking about one of the greatest basketball players on the face of the earth ever, probably. He said, "You know what? They taught me what kind of person to be by the way they live their lives." Isn't that something? That's exactly what we do with our children. You know, that's exactly what we do. It's not a promise that children will never depart from the way of truth. And it's not a promise. It doesn't say that. It's not an imperative verb, and it says they will come back. You know, it says it's a possibility that they come back. But if they don't have anything as a groundwork for them to understand, to come back to, where are they? And that's exactly where we are now in the life of our country, where a lot of people just don't know a lot of the things that have gone on. And so they're rewriting history, and basically now, well, let me get out of the politics, all right? "Be assured that good impressions made upon them as they grow up will abide in them all the days." It's amazing. I thought about just sitting up here this morning. When I used to go to the nursing home every Saturday in Texas while we were living out there, I'd go down with my guitar and play and sing some hymns, and people in the nursing home would come, and I'd speak about 15 or 20 minutes, and that's why I learned how to preach when people are snoring or talking or doing whatever or just not paying attention. You just had to learn that. But you know what was amazing? They didn't know their name, you know, because I got to know them over a period of 3 years. They didn't know their name, but as soon as I started singing hymns, they knew every word. How is that? They learned them as they were children. That's what we're talking about. Some of these things, if you teach your children as they're growing, they're down in there. So something could happen to bring them back, and God could use that if they have it. But if they don't have it, it will take an act of God for them to ever get around to it. That's exactly what he's stressing. If we hold on to the truth that early training with you provided may someday be a means of them recovering if they get off track. As a general rule, parents who follow biblical principles in bringing up their children will see a positive effect on the character of their children. That's exactly what will happen. We parents are generally more to blame for wayward kids than society, peers, or any of the other influences we parents tend to blame. What do you mean by that? It's easy for us to blame someone else, but it's our authority that they're under while they're living in our house. So when we let them be influenced by these other things more, it's our responsibility. You say, "Well, in this day that we have all this stuff," that's right. Maybe they don't need a television anywhere else but where you're sitting. Maybe they don't need a telephone unless they're going off to college. Can you believe that? Now they want to arrest a parent if they don't give a child a phone by the time they're 10 years old. To hear the children. Isn't that right? How many of you had your own personal phone when you were 12? How many of you even had but one phone in the house? And that was a party line. You say, "What is that?" There were four different households that lived in our community on our phone. So what that means is, y'all are old enough to know what that means, don't you? The rest of those young people, they don't know what that means. What that would mean to them is you can't get on the internet while they're on the internet. That's what that means, all right? You can't make a call on your cell phone if the other three people on your line is on the cell phone. That's what that means. And bless their heart, my uncle had just gotten married to a lady who had five kids and three of them were girls, teenage girls. Guess what that meant? You just had to pick up the phone and say, I just need to use it just a minute, and then you have it back. Because they get on and talk all the time. Yeah, you could listen in if you want to, but who wanted to hear all that nonsense, right? Parents are the biggest influence on a child's character. What? We must involve ourselves in the children's lives enough to ensure that the right influence takes place. Who are your children with? Where are they going? What are they looking at? What is going on? You know, where are they in their life? You know, a lot of people would say, well, that's just, you know, that's too protective. If you overprotect them now, when they get out there, they're going to go crazy. I understand that. That's why while they're growing up, when they see all this nonsense, you explain to them, this is why we don't do that. And this is what that will lead to, so they learn how to think and reason, so when they have to deal with it out there when they're 18 or whatever, at least they have a balanced view of how to make a decision. We're not trying to tell them they have to do it this way. We're just trying to teach them how to think so they will do it the right way. So we often blame others for our wayward children when it's really our problem, because we let other people influence our children more than we influence them. Be vigilant now. Do the hard things necessary. Take time to know and love them, and we'd be surprised how much they listen to us. Look at this verse. And it says what? Remember, he's talking about the law that he had given them, Moses' law, the Mosaic law, the guidelines. He says, and you will teach them diligently unto your children, and will you talk with them while you sit in your house. You know, while you're sitting down at lunch or dinner or whatever you call it, if you go out to the restaurant, leave all the cell phones in the car. That don't grate y'all, does it? It just burns me up. You go in, a family's at the restaurant, and every one of them's looking at a smartphone, and they're not talking to anybody. They're waiting on the food to come. Not a word has been said, and they all just play it on their phones. Am I right or wrong? It says, while you're sitting down, whether you're eating or whatever, you're talking to them, what happened today? This is going on. This is what the president did. How does that mean? You're talking through just life experiences and try to teach them as you're walking through life. That's exactly what that means. Both day and night. Take every opportunity you can to teach them. The parents in our culture often have less influence on their kids than peer groups because many parents simply push that responsibility off and let it take place. We don't have many teenagers in this, and we had quite a few in the last service, and I'm sure some of them are so mad they could crochet barbed wire at some of the things I was saying, because I was pretty much saying that as long as they lived in their parents' house, their parents could take their cell phone, could not give them a key to the car, could not give any of them any rights if that's what they needed to do. If the parents saw that they need to do that, and I haven't checked lately, but I don't think the state of Georgia mandates that you give every teenager a cell phone, does it? And it doesn't mandate that you give them a car when they're 16. Any of you remember your first car that you worked and paid for? And now kids think, well, I go off to college, I have to have a car. You know when Debbie got her first car? She was a first-year senior in college. She hitchhiked back and forth to Georgia Southern because she didn't have a car. Did that keep her from going to college? Nope. We don't have to have those things. And now we bow into the pressure. Well, bless your heart, you teachers. Who is a teacher in here besides Angela? I'd be in the penitentiary. Can you remember? Can you remember? Some of you are old enough. Whenever we got in trouble and our parents came to school, they apologized to the teachers and the principals and said, we'll take care of it. Now, I'm speculating. Tell me if I'm wrong. Now, the parents come to and accuse the teachers of being the problem. Oh, my child wouldn't do that. Is that close or not? Well, we'll call our lawyer. Huh? Is that the way it goes? See how things are going? And so now it's like the Duke of Windsor said. He said, one thing I've been impressed about my visit to America is how well the children get the parents to obey them. It's like they rule the house. Wow. Okay. We must realize that character is not inherited. Well, just because I'm a hard worker, that means my child's going to be a hard worker. No, it doesn't. That can be a bum. It's not inherited by genetics, nor picked up by osmosis. They're trained. They will become whatever we train them to be. And that's, I'm talking about parents. It's us. Not the school teacher, not the Sunday school teacher, not the university. Us. Can the family be saved? Yes. We have a little reprieve right now. We need to take advantage of it. For God's glory and for the generation. And I read these verses in the second service, but if you go to Judges chapter 2, verse 7 and following, it says there when Joshua died, remember Joshua took the children of Israel across into the promised land over the Jordan, and it said at 110 years old, he died, and all those of his generation, meaning his age, died. And it says, a generation came after them that knew not God, and before they knew it, they were killing their children on the sacrifices altar of Baal. What does that mean? It meant that if you and I don't raise our children to fear God, their children will all be pagans. That's what that means. And Israel did that constantly. And God said, okay, this is what you're going to get. And that's what but we have a chance. The family can be saved. Let's do our part, parents. Let's pray. Lord, thank you. Thank you that you tolerate us. Wow. Lord, thank you that you're patient with us. As we try to learn how to parent our own children, Lord, thank you for being a patient parent with us. And Lord, help us constantly keep looking at your word for the principles, the guidelines, how to treat our spouses, how to treat our siblings, how to treat our children, the people we work for, the people we work with, that you would be glorified and that the generation ahead of us could know who you are and could use the principles from your word so that our society could be a better place and that people could be in eternity. Lord, just thank you for loving us. In Jesus' name, amen.